This podcast is intended for healthcare professionals only. Welcome to the Oncology Knowledge into Practice podcast, where we discuss game-changing topics in clinical oncology with leading experts in the field. In this series, we're considering best practice when managing cancers of the thyroid gland. This series is accredited, so if you'd like to receive CME credits, be sure to listen via our website, onkip.com. If you're listening on another platform, you'll find a link in the episode notes. This episode is supported by an educational grant from Eli Lilly, who have had no influence on the content or choice of faculty. I'm your host, Hannah Wilgar, and in our last episode, we introduced the role of precision medicine in improving outcomes for thyroid cancer patients. In today's episode, we're going to talk about how precision medicine fits into thyroid cancer treatment guidelines. To answer our questions on this topic, we welcome the expertise of Dr. Laurie Wirth. Dr. Wirth is Medical Director at the Center for Head and Neck Cancers at the Massachusetts General Hospital and an Associate Professor in Medicine at Harvard Medical School. Before we jump into the interview, we'll spend a few minutes summarizing the guidance from the NCCN and ESMO. If you're already familiar with their guidance on precision medicine, please feel free to skip ahead to the interview at the 3-minute mark. According to both ESMO and NCCN, surgery with or without radioactive iodine treatment is the foundation for managing all types of thyroid cancer. For the majority of patients, the disease course is well managed with these standard treatments, but for many patients, their disease may progress to require systemic therapy. Thankfully, for those that harbour the necessary mutations, precision treatments may be an option. According to the latest NCCN guidelines, actionable precision medicine targets that should be screened for in thyroid cancer include NTRK fusions, RET alterations, ALK fusions, BRAF mutations, microsatellite instability, DNA mismatch repair, and tumor mutational burden. Where actionable targets are found, the guidelines recommend precision therapies be considered alongside other systemic options when the disease is recurrent, persistent, or metastatic, and in differentiated thyroid cancers not amenable to radioactive iodine therapy. In addition, for anaplastic disease, they may be targeted in the neoadjuvant setting for borderline resectable disease when it is safe to do so. Recommended precision therapies include selpercatinib or pralsetinib for RET fusion positive tumors, larotrectinib or entrectinib for NTRK gene fusion positive tumors, dabrafenib or trimatinib for BRAF V600E mutations, and pembrolizumab for patients with high tumor mutational burden. In terms of when to test, the NCCN recommendations differ slightly between thyroid cancer subtypes. For anaplastic disease, they recommend searching for actionable alterations in all newly diagnosed patients, whereas for differentiated disease, including papillary, follicular, and Hürthle cell carcinoma, they recommend testing if the disease is advanced, progressive, or threatening. For medullary thyroid cancer, if it is diagnosed on fine needle aspiration or after initial thyroid surgery, the recommendation is that the patient be screened for germline RET mutations, and they should then be screened for somatic RET mutations or tumor mutational burden if germline RET mutations are not found. As for ESMO, their thyroid cancer treatment guidelines have fewer direct recommendations with regards to precision medicine. They suggest testing for precision medicine targets in unresectable or metastatic anaplastic carcinoma, particularly to identify BRAF V600E mutations, and they say to treat those that test positive for BRAF V600E with dabrafenib or trimatinib. While these guidelines are an excellent starting point for incorporating precision medicine into your treatment paradigms, many questions remain. For example, how up-to-date is the guidance, and what are the challenges and practicalities of adapting your practice in the clinic? Here to provide us with expert guidance is Dr. Laurie Wirth, Medical Director of the Center for Head and Neck Cancers at the Massachusetts General Hospital and an Associate Professor in Medicine at Harvard Medical School. So thank you for joining us today, Dr. Wirth.
Hi there. Well, thank you for having me.
So for my first question, are the most recent ESMO and NCCN guidelines completely up to date in terms of precision medicine, or do you expect any changes in the near future?
Well, it's hard for guidelines to be completely up to date because there are just so many rapidly changing new therapies that are coming into the clinic. However, the NCCN guidelines are revised in real time so that when there is an important new clinical trial that has established a new standard of care therapy that has received FDA approvals, the NCCN guidelines will generally be updated when there's an important new finding. And so for thyroid cancer right now, the NCCN guidelines are fairly up to date in terms of the recommendations for testing for actionable alterations in advanced thyroid cancers, and then recommending the role of gene-specific therapy in advanced thyroid cancer where pertinent. In terms of the ESMO guidelines. So the ESMO guidelines were published in 2019. So they are up to date in terms of thyroid cancer, particularly for the diagnostic surgical approaches to thyroid cancer. They're very up to date in terms of the management of radioactive iodine and follow up of patients with thyroid cancer. The ESMO guidelines do incorporate recommendations on the use of multikinase inhibitors for iodine refractory differentiated thyroid cancer and medullary thyroid cancer, but they were published in 2019, so they aren't quite up to date related to gene-specific therapies in differentiated thyroid cancer and medullary thyroid cancer, such as RET-specific inhibitors or TRK-specific inhibitors. The ESMO guidelines are up to date when it comes to gene-specific therapy for anaplastic thyroid cancer. About a third of anaplastic thyroid cancers harbor BRAF V600E mutations, and BRAF MEK-directed therapy is FDA-approved and EMA-approved for BRAF mutant anaplastic thyroid cancer. And then, of course, we have the ATA guidelines. They were published in 2015. So in 2022, that might be considered somewhat ancient at this point. So the ATA guidelines are being revised at the present time. So related to our modern therapies for advanced iodine refractory thyroid cancer, medullary thyroid cancer, the ATA guidelines are somewhat out of date at this point.
Great, thank you. So how might you adapt the guidelines to different settings? For example, where resources are more scarce or more abundant?
Well, I think as the guidelines are being updated, the ATA guidelines, for example, as they are American Thyroid Association guidelines, I think that there will be new standardized cutting edge recommendations for molecular diagnostics of patients with advanced thyroid cancer. And then I hope good guidance on remarkable numbers of therapies that have now come online for patients with advanced thyroid cancer that are generally highly effective. I think that the guidelines, I expect that the guidelines will incorporate next generation sequencing as a standard molecular diagnostics for patients with all types of advanced thyroid cancers who are in need of systemic therapy, but they haven't been published yet, so we shall see. You know, in terms of resource scarce settings, I think there are good options available for doing molecular diagnostics for patients who do need therapy. I think certainly in resource scarce settings, people aren't able to order molecular diagnostics for the sake of curiosity or even necessarily for prognostic purposes. But there are a number of cases where there are gene-specific therapies that are available and highly effective. I mentioned the example of BRAF V600E mutations in anaplastic thyroid cancer, where dabrafenib and trametinib have excellent activity, which is a game changer for patients with anaplastic thyroid cancer. So in resource-scarce settings, one can, in anaplastic thyroid cancer or differentiated thyroid cancer, one can use BRAF V600E immunohistochemistry as the first pass. You'll catch 30% of anaplastic thyroid cancers harboring BRAF V600E mutations with that simple, readily done, and cost-effective test. in patients with advanced papillary thyroid cancer, you'll see a high rate of BRAF V600E driver alterations as well. And occasionally those alterations will be found in poorly differentiated thyroid cancer as well. And you know, one of the helpful things about that as a first pass test is that BRAF V600E mutations in those cancers are mutually exclusive with the other driver alterations, such as RET fusions or NTRK fusions. And then, of course, if BRAF V600E IHC is negative, then it might be more feasible in that smaller subset of patients to do NGS testing or fusion assays looking for RET fusions or NTRK fusions, which are the other two very druggable gene alterations at this point in time. I think it's important to say that regardless of whether you're in a more resource-rich setting or a resource-scarce setting, for patients with medullary thyroid cancer, it's very important for all patients, all index cases, to have germline RET mutational testing to rule out MEN2A or 2B in those patients, which is pertinent for their care, but also the care of their family members. And then for patients who need therapy, particularly in resource scarce settings, first-line therapy in many countries remains treatment with MKIs, but for second-line, we now have RET-specific therapies approved in many countries for medullary thyroid cancer. So in a patient who's had germline RET mutations ruled out, they still may harbor somatic RET mutations in their tumor, so those patients should have testing for somatic RET mutations.
Wonderful, thanks. So what are some challenges to incorporating the latest guidelines around precision medicine in thyroid cancer, and how have you overcome these in practice?
Well, so I think that we're seeing this not only in oncology, but in the world of the COVID-19 pandemic, that the guidelines really do lag behind the scientific data. And it just has to be that way. First, we have to generate the data, and then we have to generate the guidelines. And guidelines need to be written with deep expertise and care, and they need to be done and published correctly in order to be useful. So the guidelines are just naturally going to lag behind the data. So I think, you know, one thing that we do, of course, is follow the primary sources, the randomized phase 3 trials or the groundbreaking phase 2 trials in, for example, RET-specific therapy or the TREC specific therapy. We don't need randomized phase 3 trials sometimes to get FDA approvals for new drugs when they work really well. And so, I think we try as much as possible to be ahead of the guidelines when the data are there, but the guidelines haven't quite caught up yet. And I think the other thing that's really important for people who are perhaps not in the academic centers where they're studying this all the time, but in community practices where they're taking care of all comers with cancer is it's very easy to phone a friend and reach out to the experts that you know in fields, particularly the fields that are more esoteric, in order to get quick access to the latest updates in a particular field.
Interesting, thanks. So is there guidance on deciding the best first or second line choice of systemic therapies where precision medicines are recommended?
Well, so in patients with alterations that are druggable and targetable, I think that we do have some evidence to guide us on therapy. We do see, for example, in patients that with iodine refractory differentiated thyroid cancer that harbor a RET fusion or NTRK fusion, we have those gene-specific therapies that really do have very high objective response rates. Those responses are very durable, and the side effect profile is in general quite well tolerated. So those drugs have been approved by the FDA in a line agnostic fashion, which means that a provider can prescribe those gene-specific therapies in patients with advanced progressive iodine refractory DTC when they are in need of systemic therapy, if the provider and the patient feel that gene-specific therapy is more appropriate for that setting than a multi-kinase inhibitor, which in general would also be FDA approved. So I think, you know, providers and patients can make those decisions in the U.S. On a case-by-case basis as to what initial therapy makes more sense. Sometimes people may not choose a gene-specific therapy in the first line because we know that these drugs in general can work quite well in the second line, whereas we don't know we don't yet know if MKIs will work well in the second line following progressive disease on a gene-specific therapy. So there's a question of sequence of therapies that we still don't have good data to provide guidance. As you know, the most common mutation in advanced iodine refractory papillary thyroid cancer is BRAF V600E. One thing that I think is important to note is that there have been small phase 2 trials investigating BRAF-directed therapy in those patients. And those phase 2 trials have shown that approach does have activity and good tolerability. However, the activity doesn't necessarily look better than using an MKI such as lenvatinib or sorafenib in the first line setting. So for patients with BRAF mutant advanced iodine refractory papillary thyroid cancer, I don't think that many providers are using BRAF directed therapy as a first line approach in those patients.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Wirth. Those insights have been really, really valuable. So that brings us to the end of this episode. To summarize, the NCCN guidelines have the most up-to-date guidance when it comes to precision medicine in thyroid cancer and are a valuable resource. But it is also important to keep up to date with the latest research to further guide treatment decisions, reaching out to experts where necessary. So thank you for joining us. If you haven't done so already, feel free to head over to our website onkip.com, where you can claim CME credits and you'll also find other free educational resources in oncology. You can find a link to this in the episode notes, as well as all the references discussed today. If you enjoyed this episode, do subscribe to the podcast on your favourite app or recommend us to your colleagues, and join us next month for our next episode in this thyroid cancer series.